Morning. Today's topic, of course, is Nun Zion. We find ourselves on Nun Vav Amud Beis in the middle of a discussion in the Gemara regarding the exemptions of Maaser Behema. Yesterday's daf, we talked about many of the exemptions regarding Maaser Behema. Yesterday's daf really focused mostly around animals which are either purchased or gift, animals that were not born in your flock, so they are going to be exempt from Maaser Behema. There are notable exceptions to those exemptions, but that goes back to yesterday's daf. Another topic that was explored in yesterday's daf is the exemption of partnerships. If you have animals that are owned by partners, so then those animals are exempted from the mitzvah of Maaser Behema. The partners do not have to be Jew, non-Jew, even in the case of Jew and Jew, as long as there is a partnership and it's not a sole proprietary ownership of the animals, so then there is no mitzvah of Maaser Behema. So that means to say that anytime two Jews form a partnership over an animal, so over a series of animals, so there is not going to be a mitzvah of Maaser Behema. It's based on a drasha. The Gemara yesterday quoted the drasha. And then what did we talk about yesterday? Probate. We talked about inheritance. Now, in terms of inheritance, so when you have more than one son who's inheriting, so you have brothers who are inheriting, so when they inherit their father's estate, so that Yerusha that comes to them, that inheritance that they are receiving, so is that considered like a single line of descent from the father to the son? Or the other way to look at it is that really the truth of the matter is that when the estate is divided amongst the brothers, so it's as if they're bartering with one another. It's messy. It's right. It's negotiation. And they're bartering with one another. And so therefore what the brothers do when they take their estate and they put it back together again, if in fact they want to do so, so really it's viewed as a partnership. And so this was a major discussion and debate in yesterday's Gemara. The way we learned the Mishnah yesterday is that the proper way to look at inheritance is that it is viewed as lekuchos, as basically they're purchasing from one another. And when they're pooling the resources back together again, so then it is viewed as a partnership. That's the way the Gemara looked at it. That's the way the Mishnah looked at it yesterday. And so therefore, if you have brothers who inherited an estate, and then they pull their resources back together again. The way we view now that entity, that enterprise, is that it is a partnership, and as such, they're going to be exempt from Maaser Behema. Okay. If, however, the estate is undivided, it never got divided amongst the brothers, so then the estate is still viewed as a single entity, and so then there would be a mitzvah of Maaser Behema. That's what we learned in the Mishnah yesterday, and on that, the Gemara has a number of comments. Amar of Anan. So we're picking up where we left off yesterday on Nun Vav Amud Beis with a comment by the Amora Rav Anan. Amar Rav Anan l'shana al shechalku gedim keneged tayashim v'tayashim keneged gedim. This idea that we're going to be looking at an inheritance that was divided amongst the brothers as they were purchasing it from one another, they were bartering from one another, that is if what each brother collected was something different than the other brother received. So for example, one of the brothers received goats, the other brother received a sheep. And so that is now viewed as a barter. However, if let's say you got half the goats, I got half the goats. You got half the sheep, I got half the sheep. Under those circumstances, now the brothers are no longer viewed as bartering with one another, but this is a clean and seamless break. To use Rashi's language over here, this is Breira. This is going to be a demonstration of Breira in which we're going to say that the portion that they received is a portion that they were always entitled to. If each one of them is receiving both a fair share amount of goats and a fair share amount of sheep, so then Rav Anan says we have an easier time seeing it as just simply the portion that was entitled to them. Because basically it's a clean break. It's a seamless break. And based on that, we no longer view it as they are lekuchos. Rav Nachman Amar Afilu Chalko Gedim Keneged Gedim V'Tayashim Keneged Tayashim Ein Amrim Zehu Chalko Megiyah Mishav Rishona Lekach. And Rav Nachman says, no, it doesn't matter what each of the brothers receive, even if they are each receiving an equal amount of goats and an equal amount of sheep, we still do not say Breira under these circumstances, and so therefore under these circumstances they are viewed as lekuchos. They are bartering for one another, even though they are end up receiving the same thing. Rebbe Lazar Amar Lo Shana Lo Shechalku Tes Keneged Yud V'Yud Keneged Tes Aval Chilku Tes Keneged Tes V'Yud Keneged Yud Amar Zeh Chalku Megiyah Mishav Rishon Lekach. Rebbe Lazar is going to make a similar statement to the Rav Anan, and it could be the Rebbe Lazar and Rav Anan are arguing with one another, but it's a very similar statement, that that's as follows. Here he talks about quantity. Let's say each of the brothers receive 10 goat, or each of the brothers receive 9 goat. So then we could say Breira. We could say that what the brothers received is not bartering with one another, it's not an exchange for one another, but because they each received an equal number of goats, an equal number of sheep, so then we could say that the portion that was that they received is the portion that was always going to go to them. This is going to be a seamless transition from the estate to each of the brothers, and under those circumstances, he says, we do not look at them as lukuchos. However, once it gets messy, and by messy I mean that there has to be a little bit of negotiation and there has to be appraisals, and let's say one brother gets 9 and the other brother gets 10. Now, I know immediately what you're thinking. That's not fair. So Rashi over here explains that, no, it means that the 9 are equal in value to 10. The 9 are just a little bit larger than the 10. So one brother got 9 larger animals. Another brother got 10 of the smaller animals. And with an appraisal and some negotiation now, each one feels that, okay, fine, we got a fair share of the estate. So under those circumstances, now it gets messy, and now we're going to employ the principle, the idea of Breira. I'm sorry, of Ein Breira. And so therefore, this is more of a barter, this is more of a negotiation, and therefore the brothers are viewed as lukuchos. However, again, just to reiterate, but if they each got the same number of sheep, so then we do subscribe to Breira, and that is a seamless transition from the estate to each of the brothers, and therefore the brothers are not viewed as, they are buyers of the estate. They're not viewed as lukuchos. Rav Yochanan over here in this case disagrees as well. Rav Yochanan, afilu chukul tes keneged tes vasar keneged asar, ein omer zechok amegia mishar vishon lakach. And Rav Yochanan over here takes a very hard stance, and that is, I don't care if they got, each one of them got goats, and each one of them got the same number of goats. Anytime an estate gets divided amongst brothers, Rav Yochanan says, I simply do not subscribe to the braver concept. This is a barter. This is a negotiation. And this is therefore not viewed as a seamless transition of the estate going from father to the children, but rather the children are viewed as lukuchos. Now, if this sounds familiar within Rav Yochanan, it should, because we said this in the name of Rav Yochanan countless times. In fact, we said it not a week ago in the Daf. You can see on the side of the Gemara, this comes up in Gittin a couple of times. Earlier in Bechoros, comes up in Baba Kama, comes in Ben Meitza. This statement to Rav Yochanan is a popular statement. Which statement? The one we're about to see as we now turn to the top of Nun Zayin Amar Alpha. Azda Rav Yochanan Tame. Rav Yochanan is consistent with his reasoning. Da Amar Ravasi Amar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says the following, said over in the name of Ravasi, Achon Shechalku Lekuchos Heinu Machzirin Zeh Lazeh B'Yovel. When you have brothers dividing us in the state, under seemingly any and all circumstances, and we know that now because of the complimentary statement that we just learned moments earlier. When a brother's dividing the state, so what happens in the Yovel year? So we know what happens in the Yovel year. So anytime you make a purchase in the Yovel year, so it goes back to its owner. So over here, the brothers inheriting and dividing a state, so they are considered now purchasers. Now, so what happens? It goes back to the estate in Yovel. Now, keep in mind, by the way, that, okay, so it goes back to the estate in Yovel. The estate is who? Them, right? They're the shareholders of the estate. So, but still, in other words, from a legal standpoint, it has to be. Because Rav Yochanan says that the way we view people who inherit an estate as if they are lukuchos, and so therefore, like any other purchaser, so what happens to the properties is that properties go back in Yovel. So here too, properties are going to go back in Yovel. Now, there is a discussion after the Gemara, really more by the Achronim, by the earlier Achronim, in terms of what exactly happens when this, in the Yovel year, according to Rav Yochanan. Meaning, so now all the brothers are going to have to take all their assets that they inherited and they're going to throw it back into the estate, and now what? Do we get to divvy it up differently? Is everything going to go back to the way it was previously? So, a discussion outside, after the Gemara, but certainly an interesting discussion in terms of, according to Rav Yochanan, what actually happens in the Yovel year. But right now, we could leave it more as a concept than a actual practice. And that is that, according to Rav Yochanan, because they're always viewed as lukuchos, so therefore it's going to go back in the Yovel year. Okay. Now, comes out now that Rav Yochanan basically is a non-subscriber to Breira. That's basically what comes out over here. And what we've learning this now is Rav Yochanan says it's not only by the brothers who inherit their father's estate, but we're also learning it by Maisa Behema. It seems to be that we already got the point. Meaning we can have the statement over here of Rav Yochanan regarding what happens in the Yovel year. We could have the statement regarding Maaser Behema, as we learned on the bottom of the previous Amud. Why do I need Rav Yochanan to keep reiterating the same point again and again? That's the Gemara's next step. Utsricha. The Gemara says they're both necessary. So the Gemara says, I can understand that maybe Rav Yochanan says it over here, because it would be just like your son. Ma bincha bebarulach, avshur chavitzoncha bebaruchlach. So the Gemara says that when it comes to Maisa Behema, it could be that this is a halacha specific to Maisa Behema. Because as you remember, Maisa Behema is connected to bincha. Right? Remember, we learned in yesterday's daf, b'chor banecha titein li, kein ta'aseh. And we understand that the pasuk is dealing with b'chor. This was yesterday's point. The pasuk was dealing with b'chor, but we slid it over to Maaser Behema, because it couldn't be talking about b'chor. But anyway, the point is as follows. Well, so when you're talking about your children, so what is the nature of your children? You know which children of yours is which. You have clarity on the issue. So maybe the same thing is true regarding Maaser Behema. Maybe it has to be where you're super clear that this is yours. Avosada mechruhu. Dam rachman li had to be over Yerusha Matan alone. But when it comes to a property that you inherited, so maybe had it not been for the Rav Yochanan statement on the top of the Amud, I would have said maybe property is different. Look, I inherited this property. Yes, it's true, I inherited it with a brother, and yes, it's true, me and my brother had to negotiate over who's gonna get what. But when all said and done, this is an inheritance. This is not a mecher. So therefore, I need Rav Yochanan to tell me no. That when there are multiple brothers inheriting a property, an estate, so that is viewed as a mecher. So according to Rav Yochanan, I'm going to ask a question with a simple answer. According to Rav Yochanan, when is the Yerusha Yerusha? But the answer is very simple. When there's one son. So if there's one son who's inheriting the estate, so then according to Rav Yochanan, Yerusha is a Yerusha. But once there's more than one brother involved, according to Rav Yochanan, a Yerusha is no longer a Yerusha. A Yerusha, by definition, now is going to be a Mecher, because the brothers had to divide the estate, and because Rav Yochanan does not subscribe to Breira, so basically they are now bartering, they're hashing it out in terms of who's getting what. Fine. V'yashminim sadeh. Now, if I only had the statement of Rav Yochanan regarding a field that was inherited by multiple brothers, and the idea that it's going to go back to the estate in Yovel, so there I would say, that's a field we're going to be machmir. Because maybe Rav Yochanan is not such a hardliner. Maybe Rav Yochanan doesn't say emphatically ein breira. Maybe Rav Yochanan is just simply unsure, and the uncertainty would say, okay, so you know what? So we'll send it back to the estate because of the uncertainty. So, but when it comes to Maaser Behema, maybe he would take a different position. Inam lechatchila, or maybe it would be a position of lechatchila v'hachem alone. But over here, when it comes to Maaser Behema. So maybe no. Maybe Rav Yochanan would not take such a harsh stance. So tzricha. So the Gemara says, so therefore, both statements of Rav Yochanan are necessary, both by Maaser Behema, that he subscribes to Ein Breira, and that by property that were inherited by brothers, also Rav Yochanan there says Ein Breira. Conclusion, Rav Yochanan's a hardliner. Rav Yochanan says that when it comes to the concept of inheriting properties, of brothers inheriting animals of their father, so Rav Yochanan subscribes with an emphatic nature of Ein Breira, and so therefore the brothers are always viewed as if they are purchasing it from one another when they are in fact dividing the estate. Maisvei, the Gemara is going to be challenged based on the following Braisa. We're going to see this Braisa later in the year. We're going to see it in Masechta Temura. This Braisa over here talks about the following, in exchange for a dog. Right? Yesterday we talked about Esnan Zona. We talked about the payment for prostitution. Where if the payment is an animal, then an animal cannot be used as a carbon. There is a complementary prohibition, disqualification, and that is mechir kalev. The Torah tells us that if I do an exchange for a dog, so under those circumstances, the animal that was exchanged for a dog cannot be brought as a carbon. Now, you'll ask the question why, and there's no clear answer. The Torah doesn't give an explanation why, as the Torah generally does not give the whys. And the Gemara actually never gives a reason why it is that Mechir Kelev is going to be disqualified for the Beis HaMikdash, for the Mizbech, in exchange for a dog. Now, we could just simply say, okay, in other words, the Torah doesn't have to give the whys, meaning the Torah is Torah gives us a what's, and we just simply follow, and we're compliant. Although, you know, we like understanding, and we like to know why it is that the exchange of a dog is disqualified for the Mizbech. Torah in general, Torah is not against dogs. Torah likes dogs. I don't know how far to take it in terms of the full attitude of the Torah regarding dogs. Anyway, the Rishonim do discuss and attempt to give reasons why it is that a Mechir Kalev is disqualified. For our purposes right now, just to understand the Gemara, all we have to know is the halacha, that a Mechir Kalev is going to be prohibited, cannot be used for the Mizbech. And again, Mechir Kalev is anything that's exchanged for a dog. Obviously, the dog itself cannot be offered as a karban. The dog is not a kosher animal. We all understand that. But if I swapped out a kosher animal for a dog, that now kosher animal is going to be branded Mechir Kalev, and therefore it cannot be used as a karban. That's the those are the facts on the ground. With that in mind, let's now we can learn the braisa. V'chein, ha-shutfim shechalko echanato asar ve'echanato tisha. The kelev shekenegdo, hakelev asurim. Okay, sheim hakelev mutarim. So let's say you have a partnership, and this partnership dissolved. Okay, they had enough of each other. They dissolved the partnership, and in this partnership, let's say you had 19 animals, kosher animals, and you had a dog. Okay, it's a funny partnership, but maybe they were shepherds, and you know, and the dog was the one of the shepherd dogs. Anyway, so they're dividing the partnership. And so now, in the dissolving of the partnership, so now they're liquidating. So, well, they're not liquidating. They're just simply dividing the assets. So here we go. We have 20 animals, 19 of them being kosher animals. One of them is a dog. And now back and forth. And one of them ended up with 10 animals, and the other one ended up with 9 and a dog. What does that mean? It means that the one who received 10, so as part of the dissolving partnership, so one of those animals is actually corresponding to the dog. And so that means now that one of his animals is a Mechir Kelev. Good.
You don't know which one.
No, I agree. I know that as well. So let's see the Bryce inside. So Echen Atal Asar Ve'echen Atal Tisha Ve'kelev Shekenegdo HaKelev Asurin. So the one animal that is corresponding to the dog, so that means now we're talking about the one who got 10 of the kosher animals. So one of his 10 animals is Mechir Kelev, and therefore it's going to be Asur. Danny, I will address your question in just a moment. And She'ima Kelev Mutarim. Now the one who got 9 and the dog, so all 9 of his animals are fine. Because none of those 9 animals was in exchange for a dog. He's the one who got the dog. Fine. So all of his animals are fine. V'ima Mart Yesh Breira, Liver Chad Minayo Lebahade Kelev Lishkol, V'hanech Lishterei. So the Gemara says, now if we subscribe to Breira, which again, for Rav Yochanan, is not a problem, because you don't. But if we subscribe to Breira, which many of the Amoraim did in the previous sugya, so why don't we say this follows? Why don't we just simply say that, look, with the concept of Breira, so I could say that one of these animals is corresponding to the dog. Now, to Danny's question, which one? The one I say is, that is. Meaning, Breira will allow me to say that I'll make the selection now, but Huvra Hadavah Lamafreya, but then this can go back retroactively to the time of the division, and we could say there was this animal that corresponds to this dog. And so therefore, Breira would allow us to do that. So, and why don't we say that? Meaning, so if you're a subscriber to Breira, so why don't you say that? Now, again, according to Rav Yochanan, the question is, he is not bothered by the question. In fact, he doesn't subscribe to Breira, so from Rav Yochanan's standpoint, we're good. But if you are a subscriber to Breira, so how do you understand this Breisa? So I'm Rav Ashi, Hadadi. So Rav Ashi says, look, if everything was equal in value, let's say each of the sheep was $10, and the dog itself also happens to be valued at $10. Okay. And so now everything is equal to one another, so then yeah. So then we can if you subscribe to Breira, we can employ what you just suggested. Take one of the 10 kosher animals, pick it up and say, this corresponds to the dog. Because once I subscribe to Breira, and they're equal in value, so I could say that this retroactively is the animal that was always going to be the exchange for the dog. Hacha by my skin, what are we talking about over here? Delo shavu kulu la dading. Vishavi aika b'chad u'mashuhu. V'aymashu mashik v'asi b'kulu. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a case where the dog over here was of greater value than any one of the sheep. So if the dog was greater in value than any one of the sheep, so now that means as follows. So one of them took 9 of the dog. The dog had a slightly greater value than any one of the sheep. The other took 10 sheep. So now the dog is no longer matching to any one of the sheep. So its value being greater than that of the sheep, so where's its extra value going to go? So its extra value now is going to be distributed amongst the other sheep. Now, I know you can make an argument. All right, I thought of this as well. You can make an argument that basically, why don't we earmark two sheep that correspond to the dog? And just simply pick up two sheep and say that this is responsible for the dog. And I guess what we're going to have to say, the Gemara does not suggest this, and I guess what we're going to have to say is, once the dog exceeds the value of any one of the sheep, we can no longer simply say, well, that extra value, we could just simply, we could take one other animal to make up for that extra value. Meaning that extra value, by definition, has to be distributed amongst the other animals, in any regard. Over here, so if Rav Ashi says, we can give an answer even if you subscribe to Breyer. Rashi, by the way, has a slightly different way to learn the Gemara, other than the way I just presented. The way I just presented it was the first approach of Rashi. Rashi has another way to approach it, but for our purposes right now, that is a valid way to learn the Gemara. Okay. Good. Now, we are in the pen, and we are about to put all of our animals together, collect all of our animals together to count them towards the mitzvah of Ma'aser Behema. The Mishnah says which animals are going into the pen. So the rule is simple, all of them. Now, of course, you know, with every all, there are always going to be exceptions. And this, no exception to that. There are going to be exceptions. But the starting point is going to be all. And even the ones that are not qualified to be brought as a carbon. Now, we already touched on this earlier in this perek. Meaning the Torah says very clearly that you have to let them out of the fence indiscriminately. And the Torah says very clearly that you cannot make any discrimination between ra l'tov, between tov l'ra. Whatever comes out number 10, that's it. Now, what if what number 10 comes out is a blemished animal? Okay. The Torah here in the mitzvah of Ma'aser Behema, it's so unusual. The Torah demands randomization, and the Torah therefore says if the 10th animal comes out blemished, so be it. And obviously, you're not going to be offering it as a carbon on the Mizbeach. You'll just simply eat it. You'll eat it in its blemished state. So we already know that there's a tolerance of having non-qualified animals being in the pen. So and to be let out the fence and being counted. And so now the question is very simple: how liberal are we going to be in terms of what can be in the pen? That's our Mishnah. Hakol nechnasim ledir leisaser. So everything can go into the pen in order for it to be subject to Ma'aser Behema. With notable exceptions. Chutz min haklaim, if you have an animal which is a cross, be it a treifa, if you have an animal which is a treifa. And for right now, and we know treifa is a very, very large category. But for our purposes right now, let's just assume that treifa means that it cannot walk on its own. Okay, it's got difficulty walking. I know that's a very limited definition of treifa, but you'll see why I say that. V'yotzei dofen, an animal that's born by a cesarean, mechusar zman, an animal that's premature, meaning it's not 8 days old yet, or another explanation, mechusar zman, is that you shefted the mother today, and so therefore this animal cannot be offered as a carbon today. Tomorrow it can be. V'hayasam, and if you have an orphaned animal. Now v'ezu yasam, now what is the definition of yasam? Kol shemesa ima, o shenishchata, v'achakach yalda. Let's say the mother dies. The mother was at full term pregnancy. The mother dies, or the mother was shechted, and then afterwards the fetus comes out. And that's what in halacha we refer to as yasom. In this regard, in this particular regard, that's referred to as yasom. That does not go into the pen. Rabbi Yeshua Amar, afilo nishchata ima v'hashelach kayam, ein ze yasom. There used to be a custom. Now again, you know I'm not the farmer. Right? I've reported that many times right here in this room. But there used to be a custom in which, if let's say the animal is born and the mother died at birth, so they would take the hide off the mother and they would wrap the newborn in the hide of the mother. And that was a way of trying to preserve the baby because it still had the smell and however other biological ways you want to explain in terms of preserving and keeping the newborn alive. So according to Rabbi Yoshua, if you have such a scenario, this is not described as a yasam. The baby is not a yasam. No, it doesn't have to be 7 days with mom. In other words, it just have to be 7 days. That's a separate halacha. But in other words, but according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's not considered yasam because it's wearing its mother's hide. Okay. We're going to come back to this. Obviously, the Tanakhama disagrees with Rabbi Yeshua. We will come back later to the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. Okay, so everything can go into the pen with the exceptions, and our mission went over the exceptions. Mana animila tan rabbanan. Now, how do I know this? So the Gemara quotes a brisa, Shor Kesef Prat L'Klayim. So here in the Pasuk in Parshas Amor, we are going through the animals that are qualified to be brought as a karbon, or more specifically, more accurately, the animals are disqualified that can be that cannot be brought as a karbon. So when the Torah says Shor Kesef Prat L'Klayim, it has to be a purebred. Anything which is a cross is going to be unacceptable. Oes Prat L'Nidmeh, if what comes out is also a mutation. I know we discussed that a lot in the beginning of the Masechta. In terms of an animal coming out, not looking like its mother, a mutation, that's a nidmeh. So, ki valei prat liyotzei dofen, it has to be born, which means that it has to come out natural delivery. And if it comes out via cesarean, that's also no good. V'ayashiv asyamim, and it has to be 7 days with its mother, prat l'mechusus man. So, and that means to say that if it's premature, it cannot be offered as a carbon. Tachasimo prat liyasom, and it has to be with its mother, prat liyasom. In other words, if it never experienced life with its mother, if its mother died when it was born, so then it was not considered li'imo, and therefore it's going to be disqualified as well. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan broke Omer, Nemar kan tachas hashav, Nemar lalan tachas. Imo, ma lalan prat l'chol ha'shemos halalu, afkan prat l'chol ha'shemos halalu. So, these disqualifications that we just learned together was regarding karbanos in general. Now what we're going to do is we're going to make the jump. We're going to go now from karbanos in general, and we're going to move it over to Maisa Behema. So it says, regarding everything we just described, so the, Tachas HaShavet, and V'nemar L'Halan Tachas Imo. So we have the word Tachas now, creating our Gzeira Shava, our hyperlink between these two Parshios. And so everything we just learned as a disqualification regarding Karbanos is now going to be disqualification regarding Maisa Behema. Ma Kam Prat L'Treifa, Af L'Halan Prat L'Treifa. And just like by Maisa Behema, Treifa is no good, so too by Karbanos Treifa is no good. Okay. Now the reason why Treifa is no good by Maisa Behema, because we expect the animals to walk through the pen. And the assumption of the Gemara is that a Treifa cannot walk, which is why earlier I said that the Treifa here is right, it's talking about an animal that doesn't have a leg, so therefore it can't walk. Okay. And I said it, by the way, but much more importantly, Rashi said it. Okay. Anyway. Okay, so there we have it. So that's the drasha. The disqualifications of animals that cannot be brought as a carbon in Parsha Samor. The Gzeira Shava linking them to the Parsha of Maaser Behema. So that means all those disqualifications now going to be applied to Maaser Behema. Okay, now, our Mishnah. What did we learn in our Mishnah? Hakol. Our Mishnah's opening line is Hakol Nichnasim. Now, we've been trained so many times in the Gemara that anytime you see the word Hakol in a Mishnah, it means to say that we are inclusive. So what are we including? Hakol asuyim ma'el asuya hadatan rabban arova v'anirva v'amuksa v'aneva v'asnam v'amechir v'ntumtum v'adragon eskulim nechnasam l'dir le'saser. So we are going to be very inclusive. And that is that if an animal which was involved in sodomy, an animal which was designated as avodah zarah, an animal which is actually worshipped as avodah zarah, I have an animal which was exchanged for prostitution services, I have an animal that was exchanged for a dog, I have an animal whose gender is either tumtum unknown or androgynous. Both of the genitalia are presented in this animal. So they are all going to be put into the pen and they're all going to be subject to Maaser Behema. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon tumtum androgynous, they nechnasim l'dir le'saser. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Shimon that he disagrees regarding tumtum androgynous. They are not going to be put in the pen and they're not going to be subject to Maaser Behema. Now, what is the problem with everything we just learned? It's confusing. Meaning, so on one hand, we were limiting in terms of what could be put into the pen to be its subject of Maaser Behema. And now, as we went over our Mishnah, we were extraordinarily expansive. Well, which one is it? Are we limiting? Are we expansive? And if the disqualifications of a standard carbon are in line over here, so everything we just included should have been excluded. And if Maaser Behema is a totally different category, And we're open to the idea of putting everything into the pen, so put everything into the pen. And right now we're in this middle position of, well, we're going to include some of the animals, the list that we just went over, but we're excluding other animals, the list that we learned previously. Where are we right now in terms of halacha? So v'tani didani gamar tachas tachas mikachim hani nami lo. And the Gemara articulates this exact question. I don't get it. Are you subscribing to the Gzeira Shava? Because if you are, everything should be off the table. Any disqualification that disqualifies a standard carbon should not be put in the pen for Maaser Behema. V'ilo yalev hani manale. And if I'm not learning the Gzeira Shava, so then open season. Put everything in the pen. Yes, these are all disqualifications regarding a carbon, but Meiser Behem is different. And we know Meiser Behem is different. We know a blemished animal can go into the pen, so put everything in the pen. So La'olam Gamir. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's how we're going to strike our balance between some yes and some no. Some allowed in the pen and some not allowed in the pen. So the truth of the matter, says the Gemara, is Gamir, that we are going to make the Gzeira Shava. V'hani Rachman Rabinu. So, and as far as the other disqualifications, they are learned out from another source. The Pasuk in Parshas Emor says that anything which is mashchitam, literally destructive, so it is blemished, and lo yeratzu lachem. Ah, so now we're going to get it's such an interesting understanding, in that some of the blemishes that we just went over really categorically fall under the category of mum. They fall under the category of blemish. Once something falls under the category of blemish by Meiser Behema, that's fine. Because the Torah allows a blemished animal to be put in the pen. And now what falls under the category of blemished? So now, interesting. Anytime you see the word hashchata, so it is a reference to anything which has to do with sexual immorality and avodah zarah. Now, we go all the way back to Parshas Noach, where the Torah uses the word hashchata over there in terms of sexual deviancy. And as far as Avodah Zarah, the Gemara quotes from the beginning of Sefer Devarim, where you have this idea of Avodah Zarah being connected to hashchata, to destruction. So since I have the use of language of hashchata in both in the category of Arayas and Avodah Zarah, so anytime I have an animal that was involved in either, so that means to say that the animal now is blemished. Okay. But that now helps us in terms of understanding. When it comes to a regular carbon, blemished obviously is DQ'd. When it comes to Meiser Behema, blemish is okay. And that strikes the balance. The Gemara makes exactly this point. So the Gemara just basically said exactly what we said. Anything which now falls under the category of mum is going to be disqualified regarding carbon, but acceptable regarding Meiser Behema. And since Arayos and Avodah Zarah fall under the category of mum vis-a-vis animals, so therefore by Karbanos obviously disqualified, but Meiser Behema acceptable. Rova V'nirva, the Gemara now just simply spells everything out. Rova V'nirva Dava Erva, if an animal was involved in an act of bestiality, that's obviously Erva. And Muksav V'nevad Avodah Zarah, Muksav V'nevad Avodah Zarah. Now, as far as Muksa Nevad, either the animal was designated as Avodah Zarah to be offered as a carbon to Avodah Zarah, or the animal itself was worshipped. Obviously, these are examples of Avodah Zarah. The Esnan Devar Erva. Now, as far as Esnan is concerned, so that falls under the category of Erva, right? Hiring a prostitute falls under the category of Erva. Makes sense. Mechir Itkesh L'Esnan. Now, as far as Mechir Kalev, so Mechir Kalev really... It's not a Arayos, it's not a Avodah Zarah, but Mechir Kalev is in the very same pasuk as Esnan. That's called a Hekesh. So once Esnan categorically falls under the category of Erva, so Mechir Kalev, even though from a Svarah standpoint is not Erva, but from a Hekesh standpoint is Erva. Tumtum v'adroganus kasav is fekahu. Now as far as Tumtum and Androgynous is concerned, so where do they belong? Right, an interesting question. Meaning, are they Avodah Zarah? Obviously no. Are they Arayas? No. Meaning, it's just their biological makeup, it's their anatomical makeup, that either they don't present a gender, or they present both genders. But that's not Arayas. Arayas is when behavior is illicit. But their behavior was fine. They just simply have either an unknown or dual gender. So over here, so why should they be, if I have an animal that's either tumtum or androgynous, why should they be excluded? It's not Arayas, and it's not Avodah Zarah. So to that, the Gemara says, Kasavis Fekahu. So the Gemara says, well, the reason why they are, why they would be okay, they would be acceptable. I'm sorry. The question is, why are they? I now understand my confusion. It's a machlokus whether they're acceptable or they're not acceptable. So why, according to the Tanakhama, are they acceptable? So the Gemara's answer is because sveika, meaning what? Meaning the Tanakhama basically says, do you know what a tumtum is? It could be a boy, it could be a girl. We just simply don't know. But either way, it'd be fine. Meaning either a boy or a girl would be subject, male or female. A male or female can be subject to a karban. A tumtum, we don't know which one it is. Fine, put it in the pen. Androgynous. What is an androgynous? It could be male, could be female.
Didn't we say
it would
be by itself, though? Is it separate?
We did say that, but that is an opinion. That's not the opinion. So the Gemara says, so androgynous, same thing. It's a suffix. Could be male, could be female. So put it in the pen. Now, with that in mind, now we can go over the other side. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Amar v'chulei. So now Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says, no, tumtum and androgynous do not belong in the pen and are not to be counted as Maaser Behema. What do they hold? So kasavar, sveika hu. Now the girsa, probably the better girsa in the Gemara is lav sveika hu. That's what the Bach says. Meaning they view tumtum and androgynous as their own separate category, like we said earlier in the Masechta. And as such, so therefore they're simply not to be included because they're not one gender. They're not either male or female. So mir rechmane gabikachim, zachar vada nekeva vadaiz v'lo tumtum v'androgynous. So maiser nami gamar tachas mikachim. And we know that if I subscribe to the idea that tumtum and androgynous are not possible males, possible females, but rather birya bifnei atzma, their own separate category. We know that they are already disqualified from a standard karban. Standard karban has to be binary, either male or female, and it cannot be some sort of either neither or both. And so therefore, when it comes to Maaser Behema, because of the limud of Tachas, we're going to say the same thing regarding Maaser Behema. Okay. Okay, good. So, to recap, when it comes to the animals that go into the pen, they're going to be counted towards Maaser Behema. So, the pen is going to be a little bit larger. In other words, those animals that normally cannot be brought as a carbon can be put into the pen and be counted towards Maaser Behema. However, there are also exclusions as well. And the balance between which can be included and which can be excluded, if I can succinctly say it, is basically anything that disqualifies a carbon is going to be disqualified in terms of not being put into a pen. However, anything that falls under the category of mumen, which is a blemish, can be put into the pen. Because the Torah tells us that for Maaser Behema, a blemished animal is acceptable. Even if it comes out number 10, that's fine. Not offered as a carbon, eaten by the owner with its blemish, but a blemished animal can be thrown into a pen. And so therefore, anything that falls under the category of blemish is allowed to be put into the pen. Avodah Zarah and Arayos, as far as the animals are concerned, fall under the category of mum, and therefore they can go into the pen. Tumtum and androgynous, well, it depends on how we view tumtum and androgynous, and that will determine whether it should or should not be put into the pen.
Okay. The blemish can be physical and not physical.
You're trying to say more succinctly than me. I'm not sure. The way I said it is going to be, it's going to be slightly more. Yes.
So you're beholden to 10, and then one of them you eat, you have to then take another one.
Okay, that's an excellent question. Hold that thought. Hold that question. I'm going to address the question a little bit later on. I don't have a definitive answer, but it's going to come up later. Okay. Tana Rabbanan Kol Nechnas L'Nadir L'Saser Chutz Menaklayim V'Treifa. Divrei Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yehuda Ishkfar Bartusa. Shamar Mishum Rabbi Yoshua. Everything goes into the pen for Maaser Behema, with exception to cross animals and treifa. Amar Rabbi Kiva, Anisha Mati Hemenu Af Yotzei Dofen Mechusas Man V'Yasam. Now Rabbi Kiva says, I heard a couple more things that are not going to the pen as well, and that is the cesarean and premature animals and the orphan. V'Tana Kama. Now the Gemara says, now the opinion of the Braisa that we just learned, and specifically the Tana Kama, it's a funny position. Funny meaning difficult to understand. Meaning he's only excluding two things, klaim and treifa. Well, meaning what's his methodology? Well, if he's learning the drasha like we did for the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes, so if he's learning the drasha, so then everything we said above should be excluded. And v'ilo gamar, so, and if he didn't learn the drasha, so then how do you arrive at these two? Now, treifa, I know how he got there. Bishlam trefa kol asher yavor tachas hashavik ksiv prat l'trefa sheino averes. So trefa, like we already said a number of times, but here the Gemara actually says it. The Gemara says trefa is no good because trefa can't walk. And in order to be counted for Maaser Behemah, the animal has to be walking on its own. And a trefa can't walk, so therefore I understand trefa is excluded because it can't walk outside the pen. But ela kalayim anale. So the Gemara says, but what about kalayim? Meaning, where did that come from? If you're not learning the drasha, the gzeir shava. So la'olam gamar, so the Gemara says, no, he learns the drasha. He learns the drasha. So now we have to go in the other direction. So if you're learning the drasha, so that means that anything that disqualifies a karban should not be disqualifying regarding Maaser Behemah. So then, now what? So now, how is he including so many of the things that he included? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Over Yotzei Dofen, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, Savalak Rabbi Shimon. So as far as his Aaron is concerned, so he subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, the Amud Yotzei Dofen Vlad Ma'al Yehu. Udoloka Rabbi Yochanan. So he subscribes to Rabbi Shimon and not Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Shimon. Just a little bit better explanation. Rabbi Shimon says that when a human woman, gives birth via cesarean, Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint is that's birth.
That's what?
That's birth. That is halachically birth. That means that the woman is going to be experiencing tumas leida. That means that the bris is going to be on the eighth day. It means a number of things. It's as far as Rabbi Shimon's concerned, cesarean birth is birth for all intents and purposes. Now, in that sheet of Rabbi Shimon, we don't possibly like Rabbi Shimon. But in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, then there is a debate amongst the Amoraim between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Would Rabbi Shimon say the same thing by animal birth via cesarean? Or would he say that that's different? So Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree on that point. Reish Lakish says that whatever Rabbi Shimon says regarding human birth, meaning cesarean is considered birth, is true also regarding animal birth. So when we say that we are allowing the Yotzei Dofen, the cesarean-born animal, to be put into the pen to be counted, we are going like Rabbi Shimon and like Reish Lakish is understanding Rabbi Shimon. Next, as far as Mechusar Zman, Savalak Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. So Mechusar Zman, he subscribes to Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, a position that we saw just in yesterday's daf, and that is that he allows the premature animal to be put in the pen to be counted. Yasom, kegon she'ashlech kayam. Now, an orphan animal, we're talking about where the hide of the mother was wrapped around the newborn. Rabbi Yeshua Latame, the Amra Afilo Shachar Zimo Vashlech Kayam, Ein Ze Yasam. Now, over here, we don't have to go to anywhere else to understand why Rabbi Yeshua said it. Rabbi Yeshua said it because it agrees with Rabbi Yeshua. Meaning, the very same Rabbi Yeshua who taught us back in the Mishnah that if I took the hide of the mother who died prior to childbirth and I wrapped it around the infant, so then that is not considered a Yasam. Okay, and with that stated, just a couple of lines of somewhere between halacha and agadita before we get to the next Mishnah. Hey, Rabbi Yishmael ben Sasriel, me'erkas levena. Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Sasriel, right? A name that I don't know. I don't know if we've seen it before.
What does Sitri mean?
Sitri has contrast with Hashem.
Sitri? Seter?
Sitra, no?
Yeah, I don't know.
Seter.
I don't know. Okay. Marekas Levena, he's from a place called Arekas Levena. Unusual name, unusual place. Anyway, Lifnei Rebbe Mkomenu Mafshidna Zemesa Mabishina Zachai. So it was our practice, we did this. If the mother animal died right before childbirth, so what we would do is we would flay the hide of the mother and we would wrap the newborn infant in the mother's hide, and that would give the infant a chance of living. It would basically be a replica of the mother.
Of the 7 days?
No, again, two different issues. Sorry, two different issues. The 7 days is just the lifespan the animal itself has to experience before it can be brought as a carbon. Tachasimo just simply means that it had to have a mother at birth. If it did not have a mother at birth, then it's disqualified. And again, now we're learning the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, which is that there is a chance that even if the mother died immediately before childbirth, there's still a chance for the child not to be called a yasam using this manner that we just described. Amar Rebbe Nisgala Taima Shal Mishnasenu. Rebbe loved this. When Rebbe heard this, Rebbe, right, he had understanding. Because now I understand the Mishnah. Meaning, Rebbe Yoshua, meaning if you think about it, if the mother died before the animal was born, that's a yasam. The Torah says that the only animal that could be brought as a carbon is tachas imo, meaning it experienced life in this world with its mother. And now, if the mother died before childbirth, that's not going to be a yasam. And Rabbi Yeshua says there's something you could do. And so the Gemara now says, yeah, because when you take the hide off the mother and you put it and you wrap the child in it, the newborn in it, so so that basically is a replica of the mother. Okay. Chazirin shebamokein yesh lahem shishim ribu klapim beveis hemsa shalom. Our chazirin, you know, the first time I went over the Gemara, so I thought we were talking about pigs, and I was racking my head. Anyway, Rashi says we're not talking about pigs over here, we're talking about the chazeret of Pesach. Right? It was a type of vegetable. So our vegetables in our place, so they had 600,000, my math is not good today, 60 times 10,000? Yeah, okay, it's fine. Sorry, it's fine. It's okay today. So 600,000 folds in the leaf. Okay, and pamachas nafal erez, I'm sorry, and the point of that, and the benefit of that, and the value of that, unsure. Okay. Pamachas nafal erez echashim em kameimnu. We had a tree that once upon a time fell. Va'avu sheshesrei kronos al chudo. And 16 wagons was able to go run along the width of this tree. Okay, big tree. Right, what are those big trees?
Redwoods.
So, achudo achas. Pam achas nafla beitza bar yuchni v'tav ashishim krachim v'shavra shosh meos arazim. The bar yuchni bird. Okay, now this was a big bird in the time of the Gemara. The Gemara speaks about it on a number of occasions. As like the paradigm of just an enormous bird. And its eggs, as you would expect, really big. Now over here, the Gemara is now speaking about the destructive force of its egg, and yes, we're able to entertain over here that the Gemara is speaking in hyperbole. When you see the numbers 300 in the Gemara, so that's the tell. That's the Gemara's tell that we're speaking in hyperbole. So tavashishim krachim. So the egg fell, splattered, and the splattering of the egg destroyed 60 cities and broke 300 cedars. Again, hyperbole. Umisha Jilay. Now the Gemara over here is bothered by like a small detailed question. You know the Yuchni would never drop its egg. Now, I never met the Yuchni bird, so I'm not one to talk about the behavior of the Yuchni bird. But the Gemara is convinced that the Yuchni would never drop its egg. Vaksiv Kanafra Nim Nealasa. You take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi explains that Nealasa is a notrikin. It's a contraction of many words to take us to the fast pass of the Gemara over here. The Yuchni, based on the Pasukani of the Yuchni, the behavior of the Yuchni is that it never drops its eggs. So what are you even telling me the story for? Can't be. So Amar Rav Ashi Ahum Muzrasa Havai. So the Gemara says, no, this was not a fertilized egg. It was unfertilized egg, and therefore, yes, the Yuchni takes excellent care of its eggs, but that means when the eggs are going to produce a chick. But if the egg is not going to produce a chick, so then, yes, the Yuchni will simply drop the egg. To your question, Hedy, what just happened over here? How do we end over here? So the Gemara is talking about various stories that were told, the first one being how they took the hide and wrapped in the newborn of the dead mother's hide in this, we wrapped the newborn in the hide of the dead mother. So because that story is told, so it prompted the Gemara to tell other stories and other incidents, having nothing to do with anything, but just basically the Gemara strung these together. Its connection, I'm sure, if you have a koach of explaining a Agadata, you can explain the connection. I don't have that koach. Yeah, I don't have that koach. Okay, so let's just quickly recap. Today we talked about one of the most classic topics in all Shas. We talked about Breira, whether Yesh Breira, Ein Breira. We talked about where an estate is divided amongst the brothers. Can we ever look at the division being a seamless division so that we can even argue Breira? And Rav Yochanan is a hardliner. Rav Yochanan says Ein Breira by any estate being divided. And it doesn't matter whether the animals are being divided, whether the properties are being divided. Rav Yochanan always says Ein Breira. The brothers inheriting the father's estate are viewed as lekuchos, according to Rav Yochanan, period. We talked about what goes in the pen to be counted, what does not go into the pen to be counted. And to recap the Gemara, anything which is a disqualification regarding a carbon cannot be put into the pen to be counted. However, if it's blemish related, so then it can go into the pen and can be counted. And so if it's a physical blemish, it goes into the pen. And if it's anything related to physical blemishes, which is avodah zarah and arayos, that too can also go into the pen because that's blemish related. And for mice or behema, the Torah allows for tolerance of blemishes or blemish related entities.